Welcome to another episode of the Career Talks podcast. I'm your host, as always, Orlando Haynes. Here is where you get actionable advice for your career and life. Each time I have amazing guests that gets better and better. The topics get more interesting. Definitely super excited about tonight, but we want to make sure that you subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, etc. Support us as we grow beyond 15 countries being heard. So super excited for the support right now, but let me not belabor the point. I have an amazing guest. So I reached out to her. We connected on LinkedIn, reached out to her. And the reason why I reach out to individuals as opposed to those that do reach out to me is I want to hear their message. It's not about how big their brand is or anything like that, but it's about what they're telling people, what message and story that they're presenting to the masses that that really compels me and draws me to their profile and their information. And this young lady is not short of that at all. So super excited to have this phenomenal TEDx speaker, two-time TEDx speaker, attorney and educator, international keynote speaker, and chief civility officer at Train Extra, Miss Sejal Thacker. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for inviting me, Orlando. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said prior to us going live, thank you again for saying yes. I'm sure you're busy. You could have said no, but you said yes. So thank you for your time tonight. And I definitely want to dive right in because this is a super important topic. But first, share a little bit more about who you are and what you do in your work.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I have an employment law background. And for the first half of my career, I was defending leaders in cases primarily dealing with harassment, discrimination. And really, that just wasn't the right fit for me. I'm more of a conflict resolution person. So I found myself coaching leaders and counseling leaders and training leaders rather than actually litigating or wanting to litigate. And so when my son was born, I decided to make that pivot and really focus more in on educating people proactively so that we can create better cultures rather than wait for the harm to happen or the lawsuit to be filed before we actually do something about it.
Okay, so you was in this space already as an attorney, and then you saw a gap and decided to speak for it. Okay, awesome. Love that. Love that. So the topic tonight, right, obviously fostering positive culture. What have you seen in your days as an active attorney that caused you to shift? And you shared a little bit about that, but what were some of the gaps that you said, okay, I now have to be more of a forward-facing advocate for this topic here?
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of things that I learned, right? Because I was a litigator for almost 10 years. And I also did a lot of workplace investigations. So I got to see the nuts and bolts of how organizations were handling issues when they occurred. Were they handling them proactively, reactively? What were they doing to foster psychological safety? You know, because if somebody is, you know, feeling uncomfortable about something that's going on in their on their team or with one of their leaders, as an organization, we want to know what's going on so we can address that. And so I saw a lot of people knowing about things that were happening in the workplace. They weren't saying anything. They weren't doing anything about it, or they were too scared to say something or do something about it. Right. And so a lot of these cases also were the other thing I saw a lot of was where I was dealing with leaders that were trying to do their best. You know, but they just weren't, they didn't know how to lead. They didn't know how to manage their teams properly. And so there was a huge piece in training that I felt wasn't, you know, at the time when I started my company, a lot of the organizations were offering that, you know, once every 2 years and, you know, your compliance training. And that was it, you know, because that was required by law. But they weren't really addressing a lot of things that, you know, maybe didn't rise up to that level of being illegal behavior, you know, but it still needs to be addressed. So microaggressions, abusive conduct, bullying, they weren't really training their leaders or their teams on these kinds of topics, right? As well as unconscious bias. And so I felt that we needed to really kind of make a shift in the mindset of how we approach these issues and really look at it from a proactive perspective. What can we do to create an environment where these types of issues don't happen in the first place.
So when you say leaders, was that more of the senior manager, director level, or was that from the executive level?
Well, all leaders from the ground up. I mean, that from the, you know, I mean, your frontline managers really should be the ones that need more training, you would imagine, than your executive leaders. Because if you've made it to executive leadership, you've gotten some training along the way, right? And you've hopefully, let's hope, not everybody does, but your frontline managers, they're the ones that are usually dealing with the issues when they first happen, right? And so if they know how to handle those situations properly and promptly, then a lot of the complaints that I saw from a legal standpoint boil down to the frontline managers really didn't know how to address those, and they weren't addressing those, or they were doing these shoddy investigations and then sticking a report in a, you know, a file folder somewhere and not looking at it for a while, versus actually looking at that complaint and saying, wait a second, are there deeper systemic issues that are going on that we need to address, right? So those were some of the things that I was seeing happening.
Now, did you see this in organizations that had more new leaders versus more tenured leaders? Because I'll get more granular for companies that have a call center. You can be a rock star, you know, call center rep, and then you're promoted to a team lead, and now you're overseeing a team. But you, that leap gave you no training on how to people lead. So not sure if you saw delineation in that versus an organization that was more stable in their leadership and they just didn't have the training at all.
I would say both again. You know, I've seen it in both cases because, you know, just, you know, a lot of what I've seen over and over again is people get promoted into these positions. And I talk about this all the time because they're good employees. They meet the numbers, they hit their goals. But a lot of these people don't even want to manage, but they'll do it because they want the job title or they want the extra bump in pay. Right. And, or, you know, and they want the status of being a leader, but they don't have the proper training. You know, I mean, I work with executives now and it blows my mind when I'm like, what? I can't believe that someone in your level of authority and the kind of power that you have would make those kind of comments or engage in these behaviors, right? So I don't think anyone's off limits, you know. When I first started my company, I was training, you know, in California, which is where I'm licensed to practice, all of the managers that work in any of our public state entities. In our government code, there's a section that requires new managers to go to 80 hours of what we call basic supervisory training. I've done all 80 hours of that training. And I can tell you, I wish all leaders at all levels went through that basic training because it is fundamental and oftentimes lacking, you know? And when you go higher up, you might see certain types of training being offered to executives, but there's lots of areas where I think we need to do more. They're missing the mark on.
Got it. So how can organizations effectively foster, you know, a positive and inclusive culture? And what are some key strategies that you're speaking to your clients about these organizations?
You know, I think the most important one is accountability, right? I if we don't hold individuals, and that includes leaders, right? That includes everybody in the organization to, you know, making sure that they align their behavior to the organization's values, right? And so when you have things happening in the workplace, whether it's severe like harassment or discrimination, right? Or some sort of exclusion to even minor, when I say minor, it's still harmful, right? But maybe somebody makes an insensitive comment, right? Or they're rude or impatient with somebody. If those behaviors don't align with your core values, then that person needs to be held accountable. So for example, I was just speaking with one of my clients a few weeks ago where respect was one of their core values. And I see that in a lot of organizations, right? And so they came to me for some guidance because they had a senior level executive that was consistently making inappropriate comments, right? They weren't necessarily discriminatory or harassing, but they were just inappropriate, right? And so, of course, this is one of the first questions I ask anybody when they come to me is, what are your core values, right? What are your core values? And she said, respect. And I go, oh, okay. And so the behaviors you've just told me about, do you think they line up with your core value? I mean, I'm like, you don't want to have to pay me to tell you this, right? Like, you should already know this, but that's what I'm talking about. You have these core values for a reason. And so when you're dealing with, does this behavior align with that core value? You want to run all these behaviors through your core values. That's what they're there for, right? And so anyway, I gave them advice on how to address that behavior promptly. You know, obviously documentation is super important. But then by doing that, the reason why I'm bringing up this example is that it showed the team, the entire leadership team, the organization's commitment, right, to its values. So it sent a pretty strong message to the rest of the organization saying, hey, we're not going to tolerate this kind of behavior. So it sets that precedent of accountability across the company, right? And so that is so, so important. So that would be a huge place for organizations to really start about how are we holding people accountable? What are their systems that we have in place? What are our policies around this topic? You know, so that's, I think, where the foundation has to start is accountability.
Do you see that with the managers or the leaders who set, obviously this is set from a higher level, but for those that are the officers of that organization that need to implement, right? They need to implement this culture and these core principles. Do you find there's a lack that they're living those themselves and then wonder why there's issues throughout the organization?
I think so. I think a lot of times, you know, the behavior has become normalized, you know, or, you know, we have to remember that leaders have something that the people they lead don't. They have power, right? So they have the ability to impact someone's terms and conditions of their employment. And so leaders sometimes forget that what they say and what they don't say and what they do really can make people feel safe or unsafe. It can make people feel welcome or unwelcome, right? And so if a lot of times you see leaders talking about culture, but then their behavior doesn't align, again, that sends the opposite message that these are just things that we hang on a wall. And I've listened to so many leadership podcasts and we hear that phrase over and over again. Don't hang your core values, you know, if they're just supposed to be hung somewhere. It's true though, because we look at leadership, right? They set the tone for the entire organizations. And oftentimes, you know, I'm a fly on the wall, like when I do my workshops and I'll go into an organization and, you know, during the break or during lunch, we'll all be sitting around and I'll see a leader acting inappropriately and everybody else will just kind of sit there and nobody will say anything about it.
Wow.
You know, and so everybody sees it happening. That's the thing is like when I was doing these investigations, I would ask people, do you know that this behavior is going on? And most of the time people know it's going on, but nobody's doing anything about it. Right. So that's the problem.
Is that just, you mentioned it earlier. So is that just simple fear of any kind of backlash if they blow the whistle?
Oh yeah. There's so many reasons why people don't speak up, right? So many reasons. In fact, this is an activity I do in my workshop where I have everybody put down what are reasons why people don't speak up? But there's like 100 different reasons. Number one is retaliation, right? Number one is retaliation. That is the number one type of legal complaint filed in the United States. Last I checked, it was still the number one complaint filed, right? So there is a serious fear that if I say something and it's backed by data, that they're going to be retaliated against, you know? And then, you know, again, if the organization is tolerating behavior, and so people are starting to feel like, well, why even bother saying something? They're not going to do anything about it anyway, right? Or sometimes people don't know what their rights even are. You know, if I'm being bullied, you know, let's say, for example, I'm being bullied because of my weight, right? I might not be sure. Is this something that's illegal? Is it not legal? Am I allowed to bring this up to HR or do I just have to deal with it? You know, so sometimes people don't know if they even have a right to bring something up or they're not sure how to do it. Right. You know, for some people, culturally speaking, even, you know, like I'm Indian. And so when I grew up, people were like, just keep your head down, work hard and you'll make it. Right. And now I'm telling people, no, don't do that. Say something. Say it respectfully and directly, but you got to do something about it, right? So there's 100 different reasons why people, you know, are afraid to speak up. And that's why as leaders, it's our responsibility to cultivate that psychological safety in our organizations.
So we have a question, then I'll follow up with one of my questions. Khadijah asked, what if you take on resolving sexual harassment coming from upper level management in your lower level management? What is your take on that?
Yeah, you have to address it the same way. It doesn't matter where you are in the organization. If that behavior is happening, sexual harassment should be reported, right? So if you, I always say, consider yourself in sexual harassment or discrimination cases, or even retaliation cases. When I'm working with my clients and I'm doing these workshops, I tell them, consider yourself a mandatory reporter. You have to report that to HR. Even if someone is like, please don't say anything, you know, I'll handle this or I'll monitor it or never mind, you know, you can't do that. You have to report it because as a leader, you bind the organization to legal liability if you don't, right? So if you don't say anything and now 2 days later, that person turns around and files a lawsuit, they're going to find out that you knew about it and you didn't do anything about it. And that could give not only the organization liability, but yourself personally as well, right? So you've worked too hard to get to where you are to get involved in that mess. Report it up so that HR can properly handle the situation. And don't forget, I'll say one more thing, you know, don't forget that there might be things that HR knows about that you may not know about. Like there might be 3 other complaints filed against this person, right? And you don't know that. So maybe you're trying to just say, oh, let me give it some time, or I'm not sure what to do. Just follow your complaint. All you have to do is just follow your complaint process in your policy. And, you know, if you're afraid of retaliation, just make sure you document everything properly. You know, you get guidance. HR should be supporting you. If you don't have faith in HR, talk to somebody to make sure that you handle this properly, but you have to report it.
So through your company, working with different organizations, are there some examples of companies that are doing it correctly with their D&I initiatives? And if so, what does that look like?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I work with companies all the time, right? And so, you know, I think it's important to say that if as a company you are going to do this, you know, and want to foster that psychological safety, right? I think the most important thing, along with accountability that I just talked about, is that everybody needs to be a part of the solution, right? So we don't want to just train the leaders. It's not just the responsibility of a leader to create a diverse and inclusive, safe workplace. It's everybody's responsibility. We all, when we're working in an organization, we all directly or indirectly affect the culture of that organization, right? So you want to empower every person in your organization so that they know what to do in these situations when it's either happening to themselves or it's happening to somebody else, right? So they observe it happening and now they're a bystander. They need to know what to do in these situations. So that's where I think it's about empowering. So you need a comprehensive training plan that's going to equip all of your employees with tools. Sometimes even I give in my workshops, I give people scripts because they don't know what to say and they don't know how to say it. So I actually give them scripts and give them words that they can use when they're calling in these kinds of situations, right? So for example, one of the clients I just got off the phone with, yesterday, is that they were telling me about a situation that had come up where they had a junior employee that had, had witnessed a senior member of the leadership team, you know, repeatedly dismissing contributions from one of their team members, right? And so this wasn't even a case of something necessarily like, you know, not harassment or discrimination, but this was just dismissing this person's idea. Well, that's going to make that person feel unwelcome, right? Like their contributions don't matter. And so this person was feeling, you know, frustrated, obviously, right? And so I spoke with the junior team. I advised with HR and I met with the junior team member on how to speak up, right? So I this was like yesterday, late afternoon, right? At the end of the day. And I'm talking to her about how to address the situation, Orlando. And I was telling her what to say, how to say it respectfully, but firmly, right? And already she had the conversation and I got a call from the HR person this morning. They were like, we already had the conversation. We've addressed the situation today. Mind you, this is all happening today. And she said, this is also, by doing it this way, it's also sparked a bigger conversation in our organization that we have to recognize and value diverse perspectives. So this became a bigger conversation that resulted from one situation. So this is the point I was making earlier, is that we want to look at how can we take this one situation and look at it from a bigger perspective, right? So now they're going to be having ERGs, they're going to be scheduling, they're going to be doing a couple of other things I suggested so that people can feel more comfortable in having these conversations with people, right? So that's just one example, empowering everybody to be part of the solution. And then obviously you want to have feedback mechanisms, right? So this junior employee felt comfortable, they addressed the situation, but I think it's important to have multiple ways for people to bring issues up, not just your go to HR, because, you know, as we just talked about, a lot of times people are not comfortable going to HR. So right. I'm telling my clients to, do you have an anonymous way that people can bring their feedback forward? And that becomes really important. You know, if people can bring issues up anonymously, obviously that's going to limit what the organization may or may not be able to do because they don't have all the information. But I've seen plenty of situations when I've counseled my clients about, you know, changing or offering an anonymous feedback mechanism that they've started to receive, you know, information from people, you know, on situations that were going on that they may not have been able to know about before, right? So just because nobody's coming to you doesn't mean those things aren't happening. So you have to make sure you create different ways for people to bring those issues forward.
And it sounds easy, right? When it's said,
yeah,
right. It's always the huge cultural lift that sometimes leaders are the offenders or the block to drive that culture change. And it's, have you ever been in a situation, and we have some audience questions too, that you had to make a suggestion saying, hey, you might want to rethink this particular leader remaining with the organization because of X?
Oh, absolutely. I've had that conversation many, many, many times, you know, because if you've got a toxic leader, you need to get rid of that person. And, you know, so anyone that comes to me for counseling knows I'm going to tell them that if they have a toxic leader, right? So they're, don't get me wrong, the goal is always to coach the leader, you know, but if the behavior is so severe, you know, there are some things that leaders do that there's no recovering from. And so my advice is based on what's in the best interest of the organization, not that leader, right? I'm not in that role anymore, thank God, because when I was in that role, it was really hard when I saw leaders doing things and I'm like, you shouldn't be doing that, right? So now I had to tell, you know, defend this person. I like it much better when I could just say, we need to get rid of this person because they're just going to continue to perpetuate toxicity if you leave this leader in that role. Or if there's an opportunity to change roles, and maybe, you know, again, not everybody is meant to be a leader. So sometimes we can find a position for them to, so that they are good at what they do. And so they can keep crunching numbers or do what they do in a corner and not harm the people that are in the organization. Right. So when I get to that point where I'm saying or recommending termination, then it's really egregious behavior, usually intentional, repetitive behavior that's really harmful. Right. But we try everything short of that because we do want to, you know, give an opportunity for the leader to improve. Right.
And there's still that major fear, right, to be able to pull someone to the carpet. Also, if they're a producer, right? If he or she is a producer, the perception can be is they're not going to do anything anyway, or
right.
What they may feel is this major egregious, offense on them, and they're thinking, hey, they should be terminated. And next, you know, like you said, they're just pushed to the side, and they're like, wow, they can't see what really happened unless they're, you know, you report directly to that person. Then you're like, okay, I'm not reporting to that person anymore. They just moved over to the side. But in that person who was offended, they can still be thinking, what was really done? They just moved them, this person over here. He or she could still be doing it over there.
Yeah. And sometimes what I do is just on that is like, I do what I call one-on-one sensitivity training. So these are the cases where it's not outright illegal behavior, but it's pretty close, right? And so we need to talk to the leader one-on-one, and oftentimes it's better to bring in a consultant from the outside who's more neutral, really there as a coach to work with that leader, but really to get them to understand what the core values are. And when I do these trainings, I pay attention. Like, is this person serious? you know, during this one-on-one training, I can make pretty good credibility assessments early. And I've been around that block many times, right? So someone's kind of just showing up and I'm like, I'm going to show up with Sejal and check that box wrong. Then I'm going to go back with a different recommendation, right? So, but, you know, it's really to help them engage. Like, is this leader self-aware? Is this person really trying to do their best? You know, are they willing to learn? And sometimes I'll go back and say, okay, you know, I think this person's, you know, genuinely looking to learn, and I want to talk to them about X, Y, and Z. So I'm going to schedule, instead of one one-on-one sensitivity training, I need to come in and talk to them about two or three other topics, right? So we kind of develop a plan to kind of help that leader. And then we want to give them time, of course, right? And this is where I think sometimes organizations will go through this and then they won't give the leader enough time to sort of incorporate the lessons or you know, improve their behavior. So you do want to give the leader, if you're going to keep them there, mm-hmm. and you're going to try to work with them, then give them enough time and put a time limit on it. Say, okay, we're going to try this out for 90 days. And then we're going to get feedback from your team or your clients or your customers or whoever is the stakeholders are, and then reevaluate, you know, at that point, so that the leader has an opportunity to demonstrate that they have the capacity and the willingness to change their behavior. Right?
Yeah, that's smart. Getting a 360 feedback, especially from the team, right? So, because mm-hmm. I think at that point, once someone has been exposed and it's been brought to the table for HR to review, you know, I think the team at that point should be a little more comfortable mm-hmm. being more vocal as to, you know, the current changes or lack of changes that you know, that person displayed. Another quick question from Khadija. She says, how do you shut down an interviewer's question to an interviewee asking about their family relations and relationship status? Wow. That should come up.
I know. I think you just respectfully decline to answer mm-hmm. and just say, you know, I'm not comfortable in having these types of conversations. And you don't need to explain at all. Mm-hmm. I think we just feel the need to always want to give an explanation. But you don't need to. You could just say, you know, that's not a conversation I'm interested in having. You know, that's kind of there. Or I often just say, you know, I just avoid those topics. You know, I don't feel comfortable talking about them, or I don't get into those areas. Right. However, your language is the words you feel comfortable with. But just keep it short. It's sweet, respectful, mm-hmm. you know, and I'll say this, you know, it's hard to tell people's intentions sometimes. Right. You know, does this person have negative intentions or do they have good intentions? That's really hard to do, you know, and our brain is hardwired to assume that they have a negative intention towards us, right? Because if we're feeling uncomfortable by the comment, there's something in our lived experience that's giving us a reason to feel uncomfortable. That person that you're talking to may not know that.
Right.
And so I just don't get involved in certain conversations if I'm not comfortable. So, for example, somebody asked me this the other day of how do I respond to a question when somebody says, where are you from? Right. For some people, when they get asked that question, it makes them feel uncomfortable. I personally don't mind when anybody asks me that. I like talking about where I'm from. Right. And so for me, it's not an issue. It never has been. But if somebody is feeling uncomfortable by that, there's something in their past history that's making them feel uncomfortable, right? And we have to respect that. And so just to clearly communicate with the other person that, you know, that's just, you know, that's not something that I wish to disclose, and then just leave it at that.
And just to add a little context to that, Khadija, it's understanding how was asked, because I can see two ways, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sejal, that if it was asked as an interview question versus tell me a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from, and the conversation started off casual as, oh, are you married, family, you know, mm-hmm. versus what's your, you know, relationship status as a direct interview question, then absolutely what you mentioned as a response is true. And sometimes I think too, is there a cultural difference in feeling comfortable with a certain type of question? Like you said, if someone were to ask you, you're fine, I'm fine as well, they may not feel comfortable or perceive that question to be something different, because if you ask where are you from, you can think from city, state, or culturally you're asking me where am I from, you know, what's my background and origin. That's different, right? So you need clarification.
And this is a perfect example, Orlando, of what we were just talking about. Is first of all, there are certain areas during an interview you should not be asking questions about, right? And so this person wasn't trained properly to know the difference, right? And that's why I would just say, you know, because if this person continues to ask that question, then there's a pattern of this happening, and it may rise to the level of being discriminatory, right? So it's we don't want to assume that they were trying to be discriminatory. We would have to know more questions. But from the perspective of the person answering, always feel free to say, I'm not comfortable answering to any question during an interview. You don't have to disclose anything you're not comfortable with, right?
Right. And that's a good indication of whether or not you want to be a part of that organization, too, if yeah. your first interaction
true. Seems listen to be to your gut.
Crossing lines. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when this can be perception, but you would know. Being in the trenches and talking directly to our companies, is the perception true where most of the offense is still heavily on the men to women or to other men, or are you seeing a balance or role reversal when it comes to that? If that makes sense.
I think it's all over the board. You know, I have cases where it's women filing or having issues with other women. It's men versus women. You know, it could go in any direction. And, you know, remember the way that we're interacting with people has changed significantly since COVID, right? A lot of these interactions are happening mm-hmm. virtually. So it could be a meeting with a mixed group of people, right? And somebody cuts somebody else off or continues to interrupt somebody else. So the kinds of cases have evolved, but I think the way that it's happening has also changed.
Here's a question.
Go
ahead. Okay, finish your statement.
I was going to just say, you know, it's much easier to say something in, like, for example, even as simple as being impatient with somebody when you're hiding behind a computer screen versus if someone there is sitting there right in front of you, right? So I don't think gender has anything to do with it. I think the fact is that we're not in the same, a lot of people are not in the same room. And so it's happening to every, you know, it's going in all different directions.
Got it. I forgot the question. Anyway, I got another question. I'll come back to that when it pops in my head. So when it comes to like specific, and you started to go on this, if you can peel back the onion a little bit, like when you are sitting down with the leaders and discussing the issues, what are the first, you said you kind of asked more in-depth questions in the beginning. What are some strategies that you're leaving them with? That obviously require a follow-up to make sure you may visit 90 days from now, 6 months from now, to see if that culture or that individual has changed. What are some of the strategies you're leaving with that leader or organization?
Yeah, I mean, you know, where I start with on every one of these conversations with the leaders is the core values. You know, making sure that they have a clear understanding of what the definition means. So respect can, for example, I'll talk about civility. Civility, I'm out there advocating that every organization should make civility a core value, right? So the leader needs to understand what that means. Because if I were to ask you or any of the people that are joining us in the audience right now, how they define civility, we get like 100 different answers, right? So the leader needs to be clear on what the definition is so that they can align their behavior. So that's always step one. Step two is self-awareness, right? I always ask them to do introspection, right? They need to learn about and do the work to acknowledge and understand their own biases, whether they're conscious or unconscious, right? And this is an uncomfortable process, right? But if they're not aware of what their hidden biases are, then they're going to continue engaging in making biased decisions or interacting with people in an inappropriate way. And that cycle just is going to continue to perpetuate, right? So I require a commitment to do that work of self-awareness to really find out what their hidden biases are. I give them tools so they know how to do that. And then it's like the work starts after our session is over because now they have to do the hard work, right? And I also, I give the leaders I work with lots of guidance on how to have difficult conversations, right? Mm. So as leaders, you know, they're the ones, especially when we're talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, psychological safety, you know, I put all of those things under civility, right? So that's why I call myself the chief civility officer. So all leaders in the organization should be, you know, fostering that core value of civility throughout the organization. So part of that is having uncomfortable conversations with people, whether it's about speaking up and challenging status quo in a certain policy or a systemic issue, or addressing a behavior that contradicts our civility core value, right? So whichever category it falls into, the leader needs to know how to have that difficult conversation. So I provide a lot of tools and scripts and really get the leader comfortable with that. And then I always remind all my leaders when we're ending our session together or our work together, it's like, look, be humble and willing to fumble, right? Like, we don't know all the answers, especially right now with everything that's going on. If you make a mistake, acknowledge it, you know, continue to do the work and just continue. Look, I've been doing my work for so long and I'm always learning things, you know, in this area. So just kind of making sure that you're creating an environment that you recognize that I'm doing this work. I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to grow. Right. And I think when you do that, you also give everybody else on your team permission to feel comfortable doing the same thing. Right. So be humble and be willing to fumble. I say that all the time to my leaders.
Are there any organizations that you study that are doing it correctly? And if so, what are some of those principles or those values that you see that you may utilize in your training to say, hey, ABC company does this? It's similar environment, similar industry, similar culture. I'm not sure if that has any relevance on it, but what are some companies that you see doing it correctly? And what are those core values?
Yeah, it's really lots of the clients that I work with, right? I mean, I specifically focus on certain areas, right? So I've helped a lot of organizations with their training initiatives, right? So I do training on different areas. And so a lot of times companies overlook the importance of certain topics, right? So they're offering some training, but it's not comprehensive, right? So start there. Look at your training program and say, okay, what are some areas I need to make sure I'm training not just my leaders, everybody on, right? So again, bystander intervention training, how to recognize your unconscious biases so you can mitigate them, how to have difficult conversations, how to foster civility, what is diversity and inclusion? So there's certain topics that everybody needs to get on the same page with, right? So I get lots of positive feedback on the conversations that I lead with organizations about, you know, how it's helped to raise awareness within their teams, right? To understand and really it's about what I do. And this is something that I tell people is like, I'm creating a space where people can connect with each other, right? And so look at your organization and are you creating those spaces where people can actually connect with each other, where they can have these conversations like I'm doing in my workshops in a constructive and respectful manner, right? Because that's going to bring the team together. The other area is policies, right? So do you have good policies? Lots of companies need to go back and review their policies after the pandemic. They're not adequate. They're not covering, you know, what's going on. Cyberbullying, for example, is one example where I'm helping a lot of organizations on their policies on and their complaint processes. You know, again, like I talk about feedback mechanisms. Do you have anonymous feedback? How's your retaliation defined? You know, is it too narrow? I always encourage them to broaden their policies to not just focus on what the law requires, but make it about civility, you know, respect in the workplace. And so there's a lot of things that organizations can do from a policy perspective. And then, you know, look at your incentive programs. You know, I'm always advising my clients to maybe somehow tie their compensation to their commitment to civility, their commitment to diversity and inclusion, right? So when you incentivize leaders in this way, then again, you're sending that bigger message to everybody else that we take this seriously and we want to promote that sort of positive culture. So I don't know if that all answered your question.
Yeah, those are some of the things. Absolutely. No, absolutely. So when I do these episodes, I always give advice both to the job seeker, and I love to put the onus also back on the employer as well, because it's always a two-way street, right? It's a marriage. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this piece, and you talked about it again earlier with HR, how much onus is really diving into the HR, like you said, policies and practices of what they do? Because once a complaint comes up, that's the first line of defense, right? They're going to go to the HR department in hopes of them being an advocate. But the perception is, right, Mm-hmm. HR is for the organization, not necessarily the employee. So how do we change that? Or have you seen that change to where the employees are now feeling more comfortable saying, no, my HR team is also, you know, an advocate for the people mm-hmm. in the organization?
Yes. I'm going to say two things in response to that, right? Because one, we don't want to have to go to HR for everything, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the culture that a lot of organizations have created. Somebody looks at you sideways, report it. That's not what we want to do. Okay. So, you know, I mean, we really want to empower people so they know how to deal with these situations one-on-one. We're adults. We should be able to have the conversation with each other. And we should be able to say, hey, what you said, what you did made me feel uncomfortable. Here's my boundary. Please don't do it again. If you do it again, there will be a consequence, right? We do it in a respectful way. I like to call that in my workshops, we call each other in. Right. And so we need to get better at doing that. That's why it's a huge part of my training, because we only want to go to HR when it's, again, you're a mandatory reporter. As I said, if it's a sexual issue, if it's a sexual harassment, discrimination, retaliation, in those cases, we want a mandatory, everybody, not just the leaders, everybody needs to report it to HR. Right. So no matter what. And even if it's not happening to you. So let me make that point again. If you see it happening in the workplace, right, any kind of sexual harassment, discrimination, any kind of harassment, any kind of discrimination, any kind of retaliation, you see it happening to somebody else, report it to HR. Okay. So we all have to take that responsibility of doing that. The second thing I'll say is, you know, document what you're doing. So, you know, this perception that's out there, the only way we change that is if we advocate for that change, right? So if it's something important to you that, you know, you feel needs to go to HR, then we all need to do our due diligence to document those things and do keep our timeline, make sure we're keeping track of what's going on. And not with just the lens of I'm doing this and documenting this to protect myself. No, that's not why we're doing it. That you shouldn't have, if you're feeling the need to protect yourself, you're probably not in the right company. You need to move, right? Because you should feel safe at your organization. That's what we're trying to get to. So you're documenting it to help you remember the facts, to help you keep track of the timeline, so that if this behavior, because what we want to do is put that person on notice, right? But if we put this person on notice in the right way and they don't change their behavior, so when we go to HR, now we can show HR, look, I've tried to work this out, you know, and here's what I've done, and now I need your help. Right. And there may be some situations where you don't know how to deal with it. Then you go to HR for guidance. They should be there to give you guidance. Right. But I'll tell you, yes, I am seeing a change. And I know that reputation comes from I know that there's lots of people that feel that way. Right. And I'm not saying it's true or it's not true, but I know, especially in the, like when I started my business, which was 2017 till now, I have a lot of people that I deal with in HR, and it's been a real big shift. Mm-hmm. HR is now, you know, it's really hard to be in HR right now. I will tell you, it's one of the hardest jobs. I would say it's even harder than being a leader is being in HR, because they're taking it from all sides.
Yeah.
Right. They can't please anybody, and they're trying their best. So let's give grace to our HR friends, people. Let's really give grace to HR.
Absolutely. So we're coming up on time, but last question for you is that, do you get an opportunity to speak to the team members or that specific department at all as well? Okay. And what types of conversations, because you talk about the encouragement and being empowered, and that's the stuff I think they really need to hear, mm-hmm. right? Coming and to know that I'm going, you know, you're coming in as a consultant to say, hey, my goal is to help shift the mindset, mm-hmm. you know, of these leaders. So you do feel comfortable addressing them head on, pulling them in or calling uh-huh. them in versus calling them out. And that slight change of verbiage is great. It's mm-hmm. really cool, because I think it brings a comfort level too, with just that slight change of verbiage. So what do those conversations look like? And you can keep it short just to make sure I don't maximize too much of your time.
Yeah, no worries. So I've created a program called Civility, how to build and maintain civility at work. And so this program goes to everybody, right? And in this program, I'm talking to people about what is diversity? So getting people on the same page about what diversity is and really broadening their definition. Because as you and I know, a lot of people, when they hear the word diversity, they think it's all about age or gender or race or sex, right? Or sexual orientation. And these are layers of diversity, but that's not all there is to diversity, right? So there's neurodiversity, there's disability, I mean, there's able-bodiedness, there's cultural diversity. So really expanding their definition of diversity. Now, what I've done is I include everybody into my conversation. Nobody is left out. I'm speaking to every person in that room. And then we talked to them about what does it mean to be inclusive, right? So defining, again, I'm very big on definitions, getting on the same page as what does inclusion mean for us? And, you know, most of us want to belong. Most of us want to be in an environment where we feel included. We don't want to feel excluded, right? So we talk about unconscious bias. You know, I spend a lot of time on unconscious bias because if you're not aware of what your hidden biases are, you might be saying or doing things not intending to harm somebody, but you are harming them because there's an underlying message that you're sending that you're not aware of. That's what we talk about, microaggressions, right? So I talk to them about this whole spectrum of behaviors that happens in the workplace that need to be addressed. And we want to start earlier in the cycle. We don't want to wait for this behavior to escalate up. And so I give them tools, you know, as what they can say to do that call in. You know, if it's something that's happening to them, how can they bring that person to a conversation and have that conversation? Or how can they, as a bystander, when they see it happening to someone else, what should they be doing, right, to help that other person out? So those are just quickly. And then we talk about how to have difficult conversations, as I talked about, conflict resolution, right? So these are some of the areas as a lawyer, you know, I was saying everybody needs to have at least a foundational understanding of these concepts. We're not going to become experts in conflict resolution. That's not the point. Or we're not going to be experts, you know, bias experts. No, it's just to give that really, really, you know, foundational level of understanding. So people have that knowledge and then they have tools and real practical tools that they can use to be part of the solution. Right. So that's really the kind of work that I'm out there doing.
Love it. I think organizations definitely need to call you ahead of time as they're building their culture versus, yes. You know, the aftermath and saying, hey, how should we do it? So the groundwork and foundational work is laid right from the beginning. It alleviate much aftermath and concerns and things that are happening. So, Sejo, I appreciate you so much again for saying yes and being here and sharing your ton of wisdom, both from the legal side and working with corporations and leaders. Share with folks where they can find you, gain more access to your content, and connect with you.
Thank you so much, Orlando, for inviting me again to be on this and really sharing my perspectives on this topic. So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on there way too much. So if you're on LinkedIn, connect with me. I'm always posting about culture and unconscious bias and all the topics that I talked about on this show. I'm looking for solid information to share with people. So that's one way. And then the other way is just go to my website. I have a whole resource section too that have tons of valuable information, you know, whether you're on the leadership side or a team member, that might be helpful for you on there. So my website is trainextra.com, TRAINXTRA.com.
Any final thoughts, message, encouragement for those that are in kind of a toxic environment and going through this?
Yeah, if you're in that environment and you're going through it, get help, right? Don't let the issue fester. Don't let the issue continue. Get help. Talk to somebody about it, right? Brainstorm with somebody that you trust that'll be honest with you, right? And not the person that's going to just tell you what you want to hear, right? That's not going to be very helpful. But ask somebody that you know will be really honest with you and provide you with good advice. You know, you may need to talk to an attorney. You may need to talk to just a peer. Or someone else that maybe has gone through the situation, but get help. You know, that there's always something that can be done in these situations. The worst thing you can do is to not do anything.
Can't say it no better. So folks, make sure you share this particular episode, because I'm sure it's right. This is a massive topic. No company's perfect. There are issues everywhere. Also, I will share your link to your TEDx talk. Your TEDx talk. So phenomenal. I watched it. So you definitely want to catch that to get some more information around what Sejal Thacker is doing. So, folks, absolutely. We'll see you next time. Sejal, hold on 1 second. We'll talk behind the scenes real quick. But we'll see you on the next episode of Career Talks Podcast.